Dear friends, now we begin our practice. We are all beginners. In our Dogen Zen, which is severely warm. Unless our initial motivation is not right, all the practice we do is being spent in vain. So okay. How many years have you already practiced? Nothing. Need to mind you. Nothing. Therefore, now we have that very opportunity to have the right in our depth. Otherwise, whatever we practice, it is being spent in vain. I said to have vow in our depth. In our depth, not in our conscious level. Not in our conscious level. To have our initial vow, our deepest vow, in our background, not an object. It is not an object. The initial motivation is the right word in English, initial motivation, or initial vow, which is motivation. Initial motivation is vow, or different. The first. When do you start? When do you start? Sorry, what did you say? Now. So it is a very opportunity to have. So initial motivation or vow, we call it in Japanese hotsugan or hoshin. So if our initial motivation is not right, everything is being spent in vain. Whatever we make hard effort, mostly we make hard effort with our objective. Yes, objective. intentional, very intentional. That is nothing but the ego function, karmic core. So we need to check ourselves very severely. I have had many hundreds of sessions in Japan, in Europe, in Australia, and also many times I have had sessions. But now, after 30 years, I have now a question, one question in my day. It is easy to talk. It is easy to talk like this, like this, like this. But is this really genuine Dharma? Is this really genuine Dharma? In quality, or merely my preferences, personal preferences in Dharma. In fact, I sometimes ask to myself in my depth the same question since many years. And this question itself is deepening. Answer is not fixed. Depends on my awareness. Yeah? Question is deepening and it is already answer. And so I call this question ever deepening question and answer. So we need always, even if after 100 years of practice experiences, we still, this question is still deepening, continuing to deepen. So what is the real substance of Dharma? What is the real, genuine, most essential substance of Dharma? This was my initial motivation, initial question. Before I visited many monasteries, I was of course a lay practitioner. And I visited Rinzai School, of course Soto School, and even Obaku. Obaku School in Japan is very tiny. Near Kyoto, there is a headquarter. Also, I met the Obaku Master. And I asked, what is a genuine vow? What is our genuine vow? I asked. Well, he replied, I didn't. So I still carry even now the same question. But now, through my short experiences, through my 40 years of practice experiences, very slowly, gradually, I sophisticated. I found some essential substance of Dhamma. So I wrote this. But I know this is too tiny, too small letter, you cannot see. Therefore I put here. So any time in the morning or at any time, please watch. Please watch. Ask questions. Traditionally, including my master's lineage, or Rinzai lineage, or Tendai, Shingon, there are many schools in Japan, many schools, countless, and Korea, India, Burma, Ceylon. But what is the essential substance of Dharma with all Buddhism, not only Zen, but all the common essential substances, in fact, this, three and one, three, yes. We call it in Japanese, kai, jo, e, kai, jo, e. Kai means in English, precept. In Sanskrit, sila. Jo means this. We practice. So morning this. Okay. Zazen, we nurture, we jo means samadhi in Sanskrit. But in English, teach me in English. Jo, samadhi. In English, you don't have English word of this. Jo, samadhi. Contemplation? No? No. Insight. Option. Absorption. Absorption. Or concentration. Concentration. Okay. Concentration or absorption. So, kai, jo, and e means wisdom. But wisdom or understanding in English. In Sanskrit, prajna paramita, we chant. Prajna. This, I call this trinity because it is not three, one. My question to you, Trinity is the technical term of Christianity, yes or not? Christianity. I saw, can you teach the different terms, different words, instead of Trinity, any Is that good?
Yes.
Okay. So, Trinity. This is it. This is so, but, okay. The point, the problem, the matter is, without practice experiences, all this kai, joe, they are just concepts, just mere technical term, concepts. Depends on our present awareness. Depends on this awareness. This all becomes just an intellectual concept, merely. Okay. With this awareness, it becomes suddenly meaning, very meaning of life. So it depends on our present awareness, this awareness. It's mere concept or life. So don't make this mere concept or just intellectual diagram. All depends on ourselves. And, for example, precepts. For a long time, I confess it now. For a long time, I didn't understand the real meaning of precepts. Even if I stayed in my master's monastery for 10 years, in fact, I didn't understand. But one day, when I read Zui Monki, Zen Master Dogen's Zui Monki, I read one passage. Even if you complete reading 10,000 sutras and 1,000 shastras and break your sitting seat with your dhyan, even that, without this first right motivation or vow, all that practice is meaningless, just ego expansion. When I read this, suddenly, what I felt is very deep fear about background of precepts. So, kai, jo, e, each has unfathomable background. In this background, this is very one, very connected, deeply connected, three. Therefore, I call three. Like this, kai, gradually, it took me very long time to understand each, three of them, each. Kai, jo, so without such a experience and understanding, each kai, jo, each of them, they are not so real for you, for us. Therefore, what I am recommending you is to verify by yourself, to confirm by yourself, by your sitting position, in your daily life, please confirm this. Because this is the real essential substance of all Buddhism, not only Zen, all Buddhism. For example, Zen school nowadays in Japan, even professional Zen monks, Zen priests, they don't speak Dzogchen. They don't write. But a few hundred years ago, many, they even not Zen school, other Buddhist priests, they did Dzogchen. They did Dzogchen because Kai Jo E is the real essential substance of Buddhism, all Buddhism. Therefore, even they were not Zen priests. They did Dzogchen. They did. But nowadays, even professional Zen priests, they don't. Very deeply changed. Because of since 100 years ago, rapidly the scientific influence, science of came to Japan, and even Buddhism things were very deeply changed. Science and Buddhism very different in quality. Science, yeah. Science, more, no, I don't mean more than science. Like quantum physics. Science, in fact, mostly karmic science, devilish science, mostly. What they invented then? What have we invented? Mostly science or technology developed with in accordance with war history, mostly. That is the reality. So now, genuine Buddhism, what is it? What is genuine Dharma in substance? What is it? So this was my question. And I asked in me and to my master and to my master's master, and I got this as the tip of an iceberg. So I tried to clarify this as the essence of genuine Dharma. But since I began to chat about this just a few years ago, until that time, I didn't mention about this. What I have chatted? Only one thing. This is this awareness. Here now. I chatted repeatedly, only this one point. Only this. No other thing. I didn't mention such a... But in fact, this is the embodiment of this awareness of here now. A sort of therefore, Okay. Without this awareness of here now, okay, this become just painted Christmas cake. Just painted. What we need is to, without real experience, this is just merely explanation on the paper. Very useless. And this. So I put this inside of this. Okay. I put this. This awareness of here now. This encounter. I put here. And this is, in fact, this. And in fact. And, okay. This is ageless. I put here. And here, also. Same here. This and this same, of course. I put here. So this, in fact, this. And this. There is no inside, no outside in emptiness. So now I would like to ask Genjo to clarify more. Okay. Thank you very much. Yes, please. Through your experience.
Big question, isn't it? To clarify the essence of all Buddhism. Bhagavan's right. Each of these, body or enlightenment, sunyata, emptiness, metta, okay. All of these, body or enlightenment, sunyata, emptiness, metta, compassion, there's thousands and thousands of pages written about it. So I can't give you a conceptual understanding of these things. Maybe a very tiny understanding based on the grounds of my own experience. Because in the end, conceptual understanding is not satisfying. I think we all know that. We want a genuine understanding. So that understanding must be grounded on the basis of our practice experience. So what I'd like to share with you is an experience I had that helped me clarify some of these elements. And so the experience is this. My workplace, and maybe you can relate to this experience, my workplace has lately been very, very busy. So I have many, many responsibilities. I have many, many deadlines. And then, so it's really quite, it was really quite stressful. So I was in front of my email. Like many of us maybe sit in front. I get many, many emails. So I remember my state was very, very messy. So I've got these many, many deadlines, these many, many goals that I need to finish. And then I'm thinking, I need to be doing this instead of this. Oh no, not another email. I don't know how to deal with this. I think maybe some of you have experienced that sort of stress. And then I was in this very, very fragmented state. And then I have a Macintosh computer. It has an aluminium keyboard. And suddenly I just noticed the light reflecting off the keyboard. And suddenly that stress, that this noise in my head, I don't know how to do this, I should be doing this. Suddenly it was all gone, like I had come out from walked into an oasis. So it was very, very quiet, very, very peaceful. And then I was free. So before I was really bound in chains by these many competing demands. And suddenly, like from black to white, I was free. And then whereas before I'm typing very, very quickly and I'm like this, suddenly I was typing very, very mindfully and I was doing the task, or at that moment, very, very mindful, very, very peaceful. So for me this was a very, very important experience. And in relation to try to understand this, so this Trinity has three pairs. So the first is sunyata, or emptiness, and underneath is samadhi. So that's the first pair. And another one is body, or enlightenment, and this side, prajna. So when you go to a point, you always have an opposite side. Okay. So here we have body, and then understanding, or prajna. And this one here, metta is the point, and then sila, or precept. So I'll try to explain the relevance of this to this experience. So the first is like sunyata. Can you still hear me? Is it sunyata? So emptiness of self, or no self. Okay, but no self. But what is the self? Okay, so sometimes I've asked myself, what is self? I think we all know the suffering, the effects of the self. But isn't it true? It's very, very hard to study the self. Because when it's very active, we have little or no awareness, don't we? So this self is really, when studying this Dharma-like Trinity, we also need to understand the shadow. So when you ask what is the self, before you try to clarify no self, I'd like to make the distinction. I read some years ago a very interesting book by Daniel Dennett, the philosopher, and he wrote a book called Consciousness Explained. And in there he had many descriptions, but he had a description for a self, a very useful analogy. So he said the self is similar to a spider. So a spider weaves a web, right, and the spider is in the center, right? He said the self, we have stories, we weave these stories. We have many, many stories. We have many habits of belief. So our self is like this little spider constantly spinning these stories. And he also says, and I think this analogy is also useful, this self is the center of narrative gravity. So it's the center of these stories. So you've got this analogy like the self is like a black hole. And then some stories are circulating very, very closely, and they're the stories we hold very dear, isn't it? And the one stories that are further and further away, like the moons that are further away, maybe they're stories or beliefs we can be flexible about. But the ones that are circulating close to the center, we normally defend them vigorously, don't we? And so let's translate this idea of self into my experience. So myself at that time, this self is, because of all these deadlines, because of all these responsibilities, becomes very object-oriented, isn't it? So we often say that we have an objective, right, or a goal, or objective, but objective already contains the word object, doesn't it? So what it is this self is trying to pursue these objectives, and it pursues that by focus. So when we have an objective, don't we try to focus to try and achieve that objective? And Dolko explained yesterday. So when we focus, we lose. Like when in Zazen we have the 10-directional open look. So we don't focus, because soon as we focus, we objectify. Or in a way, our awareness crystallizes. Awareness is very, very subtle. But somehow when we focus, it crystallizes and become localizes. And then our consciousness goes out into the foreground. So when you're in a very stressed state, so you have one objective, focus there. Oh, and then next one, focus there. We can't be stable. We're very, very unstable. Because each one we focus, and when we focus we lose, like a lens. Around that becomes blurred, isn't it? And our consciousness is in the foreground. We lose. In Zazen we have this background where we don't focus. It's very, very stable. Very, very stable. And also I noticed in yoga, if you're doing balancing poses, if you have a background like not focused, it's easy to hold your balance. It's more stable. So sometimes. So this is the very, very object oriented self. And with them, with those objects, there comes the stories, the drama. So I can't do this. I need to do this. I need this objective. I don't have time. I need to be doing that. So we have like that spider. We create these stories around each of these objectives. So we're spinning. Then suddenly it, I don't know what happened, suddenly that was all gone. So that all those stories, all those objectives, from suddenly they were gone. And so all of them are part of the self. So when suddenly it disappeared, this spider, the center of narrative gravity, which we normally always have, suddenly it was gone. And what was left? This awakened silence. And I don't mean silence with the absence of sound. Awakened silence, because this spider, this is noisy, isn't it? It's constantly judging, there's constantly commentary. Very, very noisy in here sometimes, but it's like sometimes the experience was very much like, you know how sometimes you have this air conditioning sound in the background, it's very loud, but you filter it out and you don't really notice it, but it's there, and suddenly it stops. You sometimes feel suddenly such a very, very quiet, peaceful moment. This is the same. So when that self disappears, then there's this awakened silence. So very, very fresh, very, very aware. So this is sort of like what I'm trying to explain here, experience sunyata, no self, and then automatically together there is this awakened silence. Because normally when we are pursuing our objects, we're not awake, are we? So when we're pursuing objects, like Erwin Schrödinger, a quantum physicist, wrote a beautiful essay about the principle of objectivation and how we objectify the universe. He said the objectified universe is lifeless, it's cold. So when we're in amongst, when our self is in amongst all these objects, isn't it a very, very indirect life? Do you feel it's very awake, or do you feel it's very indirect? So when I'm not even aware of my keyboard. And so then this awakened silence comes. So the next one is body prajna. Okay, so body is, I think it's huge. If there is a doctrine in Buddhism, it would be the doctrine of enlightenment, wouldn't it? So this is a very, very heavy concept in Buddhism. But so for me, body is awakened, to be awake as this. Not awake, normally we say we're awake to something, but this isn't an object. We're actually, literally, we are awake as this. So in this experience, so I awoke with, there was no intervening self. I awoke as the keyboard. So, literally. So this is the literal experience. And then, so with that comes understanding. Because normally, as we said, when we're focusing, we focus on an object around that it's blurred. That's the basis of ignorance. So when we're focusing, so when we're using the keyboard, we're very, very harsh, right? But when we are awake, when we are awake as the keyboard, we fully recognize it, fully actualized. There's no intermediary self blocking. You're just empty space for that keyboard to actualize. And then you know automatically, you understand how to use it. Right, so you type mindfully. And also in relation to the task. Normally, in that very, very self state, we want to do things more and more quickly, we want to do more, isn't it? So in the precepts we just chanted, isn't it about anger? We contrive reality for the self. Isn't especially when we have many responsibilities we want to do very, very quickly, we contrive reality for the self as quickly as possible. Isn't so this spider is often a very angry spider. But if you so every task in our daily life has a natural duration. So normally we're not aware, we're ignorant of that. So when in such a state, we can actually pursue a task very, very naturally, according to its natural duration. That is understanding. Normally, because of our focus, we don't have that. So this is a very, very maybe shallow clarification of body prajna. But now, the last metta, sila. So metta is compassion, and also we have very many fine examples of compassion, like Mother Teresa, and I recently read in the National Geographic about a man in Pakistan who goes around privately, and he has his own private ambulances, and he goes around picking up the dead and dying from the street. So we have such wonderful examples. So normally when we think of compassion, at least I think often of such examples, but even in the context of my experience, compassion is there, because the understanding is by a matter of course is a compassionate understanding. So right now all over the world there are millions and millions of keyboards that are being abused. No, this is not a joke. So there is a lot of abuse in the world, and some of it is intentional, but a lot of the abuse is because of ignorance. So even something as a keyboard, it's not an object. In such an experience, keyboard is life. It's an experience. It's not you awaken as a keyboard, an object. You awaken as the keyboard experience now, at that moment. And so you very, very compassionately, you can type. So even in typing on a keyboard, compassion is present. So these are the three elements that I've tried to clarify on the basis of this one experience. And I think this, I'd just like to close. Like, my life isn't very different from many others. What I see around my colleagues, whenever I ask them, what are you doing, how's life? Oh, I'm very, very busy. Everyone's got many, many, very, very busy. They've got many goals, many objectives. And also, I'm a professor of information technology, so I do a lot of around technology. And I also take the view, the unusual view, that through technology, actually, we're becoming more ignorant. Rather than, of course, technology has done many good things for humankind, but the problem I have with technology is that there are more and more objects. We have more and more gadgets. And also with the digital now, with digital processing, it's very, very easy to create all sorts of forms and objects. So what's happening, this is a very, very perfect environment for the self, I describe. This is a very, very nurturing environment for the self. So we can become very, very focused on this object, that object, become very, very unstable, become lost. So the environment is very, very good for the self. That's why we're here. So when we have a very, very direct experience, like I described, it's clear that that's life, that oasis. It was like walking into an oasis, but that oasis is there, but we're ignoring it. Because of our object. So the world, I think, has become more and more object-oriented. So we need humans that can, of course, live in amongst those objects but not get lost in there, not have a self so easily nurtured by these objects. So that's why I practice one of them anyway. Yeah.